The NRF team is busy developing new episodes of Retail Gets Real. We'll be back with new content soon. But in the meantime, take a listen to one of our most popular episodes of the year, featuring Jason Retail Geek Goldberg of Publicis Group. We'll see you back here next week with a new guest.
We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
The way people use the store, the brick and mortar store, has fundamentally changed. Like in general, the world is going to stores less. Now, good news, we're spending as much or more than ever. So, you know, good retailers are doing great. Like retail actually had a decent year last year in spite of the pandemic, but we're using the store in a very different way.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. For today's episode, I'm going to step back and hand the microphone to my good friend and colleague, Chris Stewart. Chris, take it away.
Thanks, Bill. Today, we're talking retail with Jason Retail Geek Goldberg. Jason is Chief Commerce Strategy Officer at Publicis Group, and he's been a go-to retail expert for industry leaders for years. He is consistently one of our top-rated speakers at NRF events, not to mention the host of his own podcast on e-commerce, The Jason and Scott Show. And we're delighted to speak to him today to learn more about what's hot in retail right now. But first, let me welcome my co-host for today, Jill Dvorak from NRF's education team. Welcome, Jill.
Thank you so much, Chris. I'm excited to be here with one of my retail favorites.
I'm excited, too, to welcome Jason Goldberg. Hello.
Woohoo! Hey, hello. It's great to see you both. Jill, you're one of my favorites too.
Oh, thank you. It's a love fest.
It's a mutual admiration society. So I have to say, I fancy myself to be a retail geek, and I so rarely get to talk about retail with someone who is a literal retail geek. So I'm really excited about this conversation.
Would you say you're geeking out on it at all? Or?
I am 100% geeking out on it. Absolutely. It's almost like talking about, if I get to be talking about retail and content, we would go crazy. But anyway, you, Jason, from your perspective, what's the most fascinating thing happening in retail right now, off the top of your head?
It's maybe not the most pithy, but to me, the most fascinating thing that's happening right now is we had all these dramatically accelerated or new behaviors as a result of the pandemic. And now that things are starting, at least in our corner of the world, starting to abate a little bit, it's really fascinating to see like which of those new behaviors are kind of sticking and which ones are reverting back to the, you know, pre-pandemic modes. And so I feel like that's the really kind of interesting thing to be watching right now is digital grocery a thing forever or was it, you know, a moment?
Yeah. I was wondering that about malls. I was wondering, you know, people have been talking about, oh, people are not going to malls anymore, but I was wondering, oh, are people going to be excited about going back to the mall and just being able to congregate inside and just be able to stroll through your favorite stores again?
It's interesting. And in talking to a lot of retailers, as one does at NRF, people could not be more excited to kind of get that, you know, back in the open feel. But what I love, Jason, to your point, is how many people have reimagined what their stores are for. They're, you know, through the pandemic, a lot of it was curbside or, you know, just pickup in store or lockers outside, not even going in the store. Do you think from some of those that you've seen out there, those are, you know, changes in behavior that are moving us forward for a while?
It seems like it. You know, I mean, a couple of sort of proof points, like there are some markets that are a little further ahead of us in the recovery. So, you know, I look at places like China a lot. There's places like Taiwan, where they really didn't have a huge virus problem. And even there, the way people use the store, the brick and mortar store, has fundamentally changed. Like in general, the world is going to stores less. Now, good news, we're spending as much or more than ever. So, you know, good retailers are doing great. Like retail actually had a decent year last year in spite of the pandemic. But we're using the store in a very different way. So we go to the store less. We buy more stuff when we go to the store. Target, you know, just announced this week and 95% of all their sales were fulfilled by store. So, you know, that store is a super important fulfillment point for them. So it does feel like that role of the store, you know, I would argue it was already starting to evolve before the pandemic, but the pandemic has really accelerated that evolution. And whether it's permanent or not, like, I'm not sure anyone knows, but I could tell you some very big smart retailers are making significant investments as if it is permanent. So, you know, there is that.
It's interesting you talked about, you know, Taiwan and China being ahead of the United States. And, you know, they were already doing that mobile pickup and the, and, you know, the thinking outside the physical store, you know, years ago, right? I mean, I remember that we covered there's like a mobile, like a little car, right? That was basically a mobile convenience store that I think is just now coming to the US, but they've been doing it there. It's really interesting to see how it's going to last after this, the convenience factor, because everybody just wants things to be easier for them, right? We have a lot of aspirations, but ultimately we're going to do what's easiest for us.
Yeah. Reducing friction and making things easier is generally a good way to win.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's your PhD, what's that called when you have a, your statement.
My doctoral thesis,
maybe? My doctoral thesis. Thank you. I'm stumbling. Yeah.
Best to take money from people that are trying to give it to you.
That want to give it to you. I mean, so sustainability is a topic that, you know, you pretty much can't read a headline without it. From the research I've read, it's really, if you make sustainability easy for customers, so i.e. the product is already sustainable, or you give them an option to consolidate their packages before being delivered to save on, you know, shipping, carbon footprint, those are the most successful. Are there other things kind of in the sustainability space that you've seen either through this year or kind of moving forward that have been really, really successful?
Yeah, you know, it's tricky. Sustainability is a hard one because they're on the one hand, a lot of the sustainability challenges in our industry are getting more acute. People are more aware of them. The world's better at communicating all of those things. And so there is better awareness. And, you know, I choose to believe in the fundamental good of people. Like, we see these problems with the earth and we want to leave a good earth for our kids. So I think all that's true. And it's getting a lot of buzz right now, right? But then the answer is usually, and we did a survey and consumers say they prefer green products, or consumers say they would spend more for sustainable products. And the sad truth is, no, they wouldn't. And consumers have been saying that for 20 years. And yet, you know, all the niche products that launched that were more expensive because they had, you know, more responsible practices, you know, frankly, haven't won. And so I guess the old cynical part of me says that, well, I think people do care about these issues today. That the expectation that they're going to do more work to pick sustainable products or pay more for sustainable products is unlikely. And so to me, the takeaway there is, sort of implied in your question, it has to be the easiest, cheapest, best option, right? And so then the purpose-driven companies, the more responsible product wins if it's at parity with the other products. But I don't think it can win by being, you know, a premium.
You know, a lot of sustainability is about efficiency, right? Like, we don't want to waste resources. We don't want to waste time. We want to streamline everything, like you say. But, you know, yes, it's the easiest, most visible way to show the consumer that I am a sustainable company is to offer sustainable green products. But it feels like, especially with technology accelerating the way it is, the companies have so much more opportunity to be sustainable on the back end, you know, in the supply chain. Can you talk a little bit about how technology is kind of helping that?
Like, so per your point, like, a lot of good sustainability practices are also just great economic practices, right? And those are the easiest places to get a win when the financial interests and the ecological interests overlap, right? So this is an older example, but to me, this epitomizes like the kind of opportunities we need to be looking for. We've all shopped for cold beverages in a retail store, right? And we probably didn't think about it, but the retailer had to pay a lot of money to make that beverage cold. Like we literally turn electricity into cold in this thing called the refrigerator. But customers also want to see the beautiful can of Coke. So we spend a lot of money to turn on a really hot light to light up the cold can of Coke, right? So every grocery store in America simultaneously is paying to refrigerate and heat the same space, which I'm not an ecological expert, but like it turns out that's not a good practice. So when you can make cold lights, which are a thing called LCDs, and install them in the refrigerators, it's a great ecological story, right? Replacing all of those incandescent light bulbs with LCDs is a legitimate green practice. And oh, by the way, the refrigeration costs and the labor to change those light bulbs is a huge win for the retailer, right? Like you think about tons of retailers have these paper price tags on every shelf. And in the data-driven personalization world, all these retailers have dynamic pricing. So you could have a store to 50,000 items and you may pay labor in that store to change the paper price tags every day on 50,000 items. So it turns out those price tags come from trees, which are part of the ecology. And if we can replace those paper signs with a digital sign that changes the price without killing a tree, that the labor savings more than pays for the capital investment in these more expensive shelf edges. And then you can, as a bonus, do better marketing on them and put ratings and reviews and things like that. So I feel like there's a lot of examples where the sustainability interests overlap with economic interests. And I'm not saying that alone will save the earth, but man, those are the first easiest places to get the wins.
So looking forward at this year, so we are hopefully coming out of the pandemic in terms of the opening. Yeah, exactly. Knocking on my head, fingers crossed, all that. How do you think, are there any tactics retailers can do to either have people, if it's their goal, come back into the stores, or have people be more excited about the experience they could have in the physical store? So, you know, whether it's a, you know, convenience store, a grocery store, a furniture store, are there any tactics you've seen out there globally that have helped get people kind of back into the retail physical world?
So yes, and I promise to tell you some. I don't love it when a retailer's goal is to get people back in the store, right? Like I'm not an anti-store guy. I'm not by any means saying like, oh, the store should die and we should all just get all our stuff delivered home. I'm a fourth generation retailer and I love stores. But like our goal should not be to get the consumers to do a certain thing, right? Like our goal should be to make the consumers super happy by doing what they want.
Yeah.
And so I would just say like, it's perfectly natural to have this kind of inclination to say, hey, I have a bunch of stores. My short-term goal should be to get people to use them more. But like, I would actually argue, actually, this is a great opportunity to reset and figure out what the customer does want and get to where she is instead of trying to change her. I'm not very good at relationships, but I have learned it's not good to change, try to hope to change your partner. I know my partner's struggling mightily with that goal. So that being said, like a super fascinating one from the pandemic is what I call the food wars. And what I mean by the food wars is like before the pandemic, everybody had their own swim lane, right? Like if you were going to cook at home, you got your calories from a grocery store. If you were going to eat your meal in your car, which all of us with young kids have no judgment zone, right? Like you were going to go to a QSR fast food place. And you know, if you were going to have a extravagant family dinner, then of course Applebee's is the spot, right?
Clearly,
at a table. So as a result of the pandemic, like all of those swim lanes are broken, right? Like grocery stores are trying to solve all three of those occasions for families, mm-hmm. and restaurants are trying to solve all three of those occasions, and QSRs are start. You know, so the good news, bad news. All of those food businesses have access to way more calories that they can sell. Their TAM is way higher than it's ever been before. Bad mm-hmm. news, they have more competitors fighting for that share of stomach than ever before. And so one of the prominent ways that plays out is pre-pandemic, you spent 50% of your food budget at grocery stores and 50% at restaurants, right? And then restaurants didn't do very well in the pandemic. So at the peak, it was like 70-30 our grocery stores. So now the pandemic is abating, as Jill officially announced. And as we all know, she, you know, the world is obligated to follow her lead. So, yeah. So as the pandemic abates, if you're a grocery store, what you don't want to do is give back 50% of those calories to the restaurants. Like we, you know, sorry for all my friends in the restaurant industry, but the grocery store would like to keep your customer, right? And so you're seeing a lot of interesting marketing to lock in those pandemic behaviors to a post-pandemic consumer. So, hey, don't forget, you bought an Instapot during the pandemic. Here's some new recipes for your Instapot. You took that virtual cooking class. Here's the next cooking class in that series. You embraced a more healthy lifestyle, and we have way less salt in our calories than the restaurant does. There, you know, you're in a recession and there's economic uncertainty. Our calories are more affordable than the restaurant calories. Like, we're seeing restaurant or grocery stores run all these marketing plays to remind customers of the benefit of the new behavior they adopted and lock it in, right? Now, conversely, if you're a restaurant, you're trying to remind people about all the things they missed. There's a great commercial that's running right now that Pepsi is running, right? And you know, Pepsi is one of those things. They're on both sides. They sell a lot of sodas at restaurants, and that business was greatly curtailed. And they sell a lot of beverages at grocery stores, and grocery stores had their greatest year ever. But I think on the aggregate, you know, Pepsi feels like their ecosystem is better served by having that diversification and having a robust restaurant business. So they're running this really heartwarming commercial that reminds people of all the fun behaviors we used to have before the pandemic. And I don't know if you've seen it, but it's to the Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow song. And it starts with
Annie.
Yeah, and so it's Annie, and starts with like two people getting in the turnstile to get into their office building together, and they're like sharing that same little compartment in the revolving door. But then they're like cutting to like, you know, people like sharing wings at a bowling alley and putting their fingers in the public bowling ball. And like eventually it's like strangers hugging over a good play at a baseball game. And, you know, the final scene is like, you know, a bunch of strangers at a wedding, you know, relaxing on the patio after the main event and you know, sharing a Pepsi with a stranger. They're playing on that nostalgia of all that stuff that we used to do that we can't do right now. So it's funny. We're seeing both kinds of marketing plays playing into whatever your particular strength and situation is.
That's fascinating. I have not seen that. But I guess they're not running it on Bravo, which is my...
Yeah, I have a big conflict in my life. My career is literally funded by advertising. I work for a giant advertising agency, and my wife is the most efficient TV commercial skipper in the history of mankind. So it's like literally, like I've never seen a commercial watching TV with my wife. And so sometimes just as a feeling of duty when she's not around, like I just fire up the DVR and watch commercials.
Just for fun.
Oh, very similar. Yeah. I mute my commercials, but then every once in a while I will unmute them and be like,
"What? I know. They're good. They're the best in the biz." That so resetting to what the customer wants is, you know, something to kind of draw out of that.
Yeah.
Looking at the share that they've gained and then looking at what they can do to kind of continue the behavior going forward. I mean, I remember you said it, I think it was on one of your podcasts, Jason, how the adoption of online grocery orders for the kind of the boomer generation was just absolutely insanely high. And will those behaviors stick? And, you know, it's fascinating to think about. I mean, this was a beyond obviously the obvious world changing. It really shifted consumer behavior so quickly. Do you think in terms of retail experience and technology, where are we going to go next? What is, you know, we've shifted. We don't have to go to a store if we don't want to. We don't even have to leave our house to get most things. Where do we go from here, either as consumers or the brands? What can we expect going forward?
there's, you know, a couple areas of technology that seem like pretty safe bets right now. Like, again, as we talked about earlier, the whole using the store for last mile fulfillment and curbside pickup is a huge thing. Like, this was a big earnings week. You know, Walmart, Target, you know, everyone was talking about that. Hey, you think our growth number and our e-commerce growth was impressive? Well, our curbside pickup or our same day services in Target vernacular was even wildly more impressive. And so it turns out there's a lot of inefficiencies and economical challenges with the versions of those services that we rolled out like hastily during the pandemic. And so now we're seeing a lot of retailers go back and invest in technology to optimize those experiences, right? So instead of paying the kid to run around the store and pick all your groceries and then stand on the curb when you drive up, maybe we should have all those groceries in a mini fulfillment center and a robot should pick those groceries that, you know, is triggered by the GPS chip in your phone when you get near the store, right? And so okay, that's called the micro fulfillment center. We're seeing a lot of activity in that. When you pick up your groceries at the curbside, you don't see the packs of chewing gum at the point of sale system while you're waiting to check out. So, hey, we need a way to remind people to get gum when they're coming to curbside. So we're seeing digital signage in that curbside and impulse buy opportunities, things like that. So all of the tech around that last mile feels like one area that we're investing in. And then because there's a lot of new digital shoppers, right? So a lot of those boomers that, you know, were the last holdouts on e-commerce or certainly had never done grocery e-commerce before. Right. Now they're ordering all their stuff online. Many of them will go back to the store, but they may expect some of the amenities that they now have experienced from digital, right? So when you shopped online, you might have gotten better product information than you get on the package, right? Like you may not have been able to search based on gluten-free products in the store. You may not have seen ratings and reviews for the new kind of flour that you're interested in the store, but you got that online and you loved it. So now you're standing in the store. Well, why can't I find all the gluten-free products in the store? Or why can't I read the ratings and reviews in the store? So I do feel like there's elevated expectations of the digital amenities inside of brick and mortar stores. So I feel like that's another area that we'll probably see a lot of traction, you know, and at the very least be talking about in the next year.
Full circle.
Well, unfortunately, we're almost out of time. I'm sorry that we have to end this conversation. Okay, so before we go, we have one more thing to do. It's a special segment we call Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire. Thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
Jill, kick it off.
Your Starbucks order.
Permanent change from the pandemic. Used to get iced lattes from the store, and those were a pain to make at home. So I started consuming mass quantities of Starbucks iced coffee. And so my new thing is the iced coffee in the fridge. And it it's super fascinating because Starbucks used to know I was their best customer based on all the customer affinity activity I had in the store. I'm still their best customer. Like, I literally have a truck delivering all of this iced coffee, but now it's like sold through an intermediary. Nestle distributes that coffee to the grocery store that I buy it all of. And it's a perfect example. The pandemic changed my behavior. Now Starbucks doesn't see my purchases. And so they've incorrectly assumed that I have left them when I'm more addicted than ever before.
So we should let Kevin Johnson know that you are okay. He might be worried.
Yes, I'm actually expecting a call any day now.
Any moment. So yeah, yes. That was a fantastic, not so rapid answer, but I appreciate it. All right, Chris, you're up.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
I mean, all of the typical things, but I'm a fourth generation retailer, and I literally started working in stores when I was about 14 years old. So I'm not going to lie and say, oh, I wanted to, at 14, I knew I wanted to be a retailer. I probably wanted to be an astronaut or something cooler. And now retailers are becoming astronauts, side note, but that's a separate deal. I did start in this retail game quite early, and it obviously stuck.
I love it. what is a good recent book that you have read, you'd recommend?
Yeah, well, so the easy answer is Amazon Unbound, which is Brad Stone's new follow-up biography on Amazon. But, you know, I also like, but I have tried to learn a bunch of new skills in the pandemic with some of the extra time. So I've done some nerdy things like I'm learning Tableau so I can slice and dice the data. U.S. Department of Commerce data a little bit better. And that's been fun.
So you're going to go from a fourth generation retailer to going to work for the government. No, I'm just kidding.
Seems unlikely that they would take me, but yeah.
Yeah, seems unlikely. Okay, that is a good nerdy skill. I approve. Okay.
Yeah, per the geek in Retail Geek.
All right, to wrap things up, what is your mantra for 2021?
Like, living the COVID dream, I just wish I could wake up.
Happy retailing.
Happy commercing.
Happy commercing. I blew it.
Okay. I do have one more question, Jason. Where can people go to learn more about retail geekdom?
Yes. As if there's someone that already doesn't know too much about retail geekdom, there is a place for all things retail geek. It's retailgeek.com. And you can find the podcast there. You can, my new thing is doing some YouTube videos. So you can find those. And then, you know, if you are interested in my day job, you can, you know, find out all about the stuff we do at Publicis there as well.
I love it.
Great. Well, thanks, Jason. Thank you, Jill.
Of course. Thank you, Chris. Great job.
Always a pleasure to see you guys. Don't forget to pack the sunscreen for Belize.
I will. And the bug spray.
Thank you both. And thank you for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about today's discussion and more at retailgetsreal.com. And please send your feedback and episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. Thanks for listening.